Welcome to the afternoon session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. It's Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. I'm Rico Bishop, and I'm pleased to be presiding this afternoon, and I'm joined by Judge Mike Pirtle on my right and Judge Dave Arterburn on my left. I want to remind everybody that we are live streaming, so if you have sensitive information, just be aware of that because it will be available to the public to access later. All right, our first case of the day is In Re Interest of Alexis. Council may approach. Yes, thank you. All right. Just to clarify, I think we've divided time so that each party has 10 minutes. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. All right. Again, this is In Re Interest of Alexis.
May it please the court. My name is Laurel Johnson, and this is in the interest of Alexis S. and Caden S., and I represent their mother. This case is about a mother struggling with substance abuse and her relatively short opportunity within the juvenile court to work towards reunifying with her children. While not used in this particular case, in general, state statutes allow for a time frame to be used as the basis for a filing of a motion to terminate parental rights, and that is 15 out of the most recent 22 months. In this case, the children were removed from their mother's care only approximately 10 and a half months prior to the county attorney filing a motion to terminate my client's rights. It was March of 2016 that the children were removed from my client by an order of the court. After attempts to place the children with my client's parents, Alexis and Caden were ultimately placed in separate foster homes. Alexis was placed with her sibling, Nevaeh, in Nevaeh's father's home. Throughout the next several months, my client did make several attempts at addressing her substance abuse by engaging in drug testing, substance abuse evaluations, and entering various different treatment programs. My client did enter and successfully complete treatment in February of 2017, which would be 11 months after the children were removed from her care.
Go ahead.
That was the sixth time that she had started treatment. The previous five she started and quit.
That's correct.
Right? So on the sixth time, she did complete it. Wasn't there a problem with her follow-up then?
She did struggle with follow-up and follow-through, and part of our argument is that there weren't reasonable efforts made in this case, and part of that was the aftercare, and part of that was the contact that she was allowed with her children throughout the time, which she maintains would have aided in her overall progress.
But she actually had an appointment scheduled, didn't she, with Lutheran Family Services, and she just didn't show up for that kind of follow-up.
Are you referring to after?
Yes.
That's correct.
The other thing is she didn't actually complete the treatment until after the petition for termination was filed.
That's correct, and that's part of the reason that I raised the issue of the time frame. It's sort of rare in these cases to see a filing prior to even a 12-month mark where the children have been out of home, and I think part of that is because it takes time, and addiction specifically, it often isn't something that's addressed on the first attempt, and I think that's demonstrated throughout this case. Throughout the entire case, my client sought out contact with her children. The only point at which the trial court suspended her visitation with her children was while she was incarcerated, and even then, the order was flexible enough to allow for contact with her children once she was out of incarceration. So following her incarceration, she was allowed therapeutic and supervised contact with her children, which the department failed to ever arrange for her.
Wasn't part of the problem is the visits or the contact was having a negative impact on the children?
I don't know that there's, it's never clear in the record that there was a negative impact on the children so much as the fear that it might have a negative impact on the children.
Didn't Alexis express her frustration and her disappointment?
She did, but her therapist also indicated family therapy would have been beneficial, and family therapy was never arranged. Alexis is also only 12 years old, and while her therapist does put weight in what she says, she's also still a child, and there was an order and a need for family therapy in this case, and then that never occurred. The county attorney alleges in their motion four different grounds for termination of parental rights, and one of those is reasonable efforts, which I sort of touched on, and the others include her habitual use of narcotics, in addition to substantial and continuous neglect, and then the finding that it was in the children's best interest that her rights be terminated. It's our position that no such ground existed, but at the core of all of these arguments is the amount of time she was given and the lack of reasonable efforts made by the department to put some of the services in place to try to address the whole case plan, which is more than just the substance abuse treatment, but also the contact with her children, the supervised visits, the therapeutic component that was ordered, and really there was never adequate follow-through by the department to make sure that those therapeutic services were put in place to address my client's relationship with her children. We've made two arguments in terms of reasonable efforts, and that is that my client substantially complied with the court plan that was ordered at disposition, but we also argue that she was denied a reasonable opportunity to rehabilitate herself given the lack of reasonable efforts that were there to assist her, as well as the short amount of time prior to that filing of a motion to terminate parental rights. It's our position that the Department of Health and Human Services essentially made up their mind that she wasn't going to get her children back.
How is the department responsible for her not showing up for the drug tests after she'd had her treatment that she actually completed that sixth time?
The department's not responsible for that. The department is responsible for arranging contact with her children, visitation.
But one of the components of the plan required her to test, right?
That's correct.
And she failed to do that on a number of occasions.
That's correct. That is correct. And we feel that just like my client doesn't get to pick and choose what types of services she's going to engage in, and obviously she has been penalized for that and was throughout the course of the juvenile court case, we feel the department shouldn't have been able to pick and choose what services they were going to put in place for her, including the contact, which was ordered by the court, and then there was never follow-through about.
How long are, I mean, it's clear, these are always tragic, these cases. And it appears she cares about her children, but not enough to have made serious efforts to get herself on track. I mean, how long should the state wait for somebody to actually grow up and accept responsibility? I mean, she left five treatment facilities.
That's correct, and I don't know that there's a specific timeline with addiction about how long. Clearly, children shouldn't have to wait forever for their parents, but again, I think that the statute is in place to sort of address permanency at a 15-month mark in cases typically. But
we're not talking about subsection 7 here. We're talking about some other subsections where that's not even applicable.
And we feel like the fact that a determination was made that she was substantially and continuously neglecting her children was done in a way that wasn't just or wasn't fully appreciating the fact that there were other areas within this case that she was not given an opportunity to make progress.
Was there any evidence of her saying to the department, taking affirmative steps with the department, I want to get into whatever types of rehabilitative programs that she might be able to access? Is there any evidence of her being troubled by her situation and wanting to make those, and wanting to get some services started?
There's, in the record, there's a testimony from the Department of Health and Human Services Supervisor Nicole Lemke about her always being cooperative and willing to meet and discuss. And I think the fact that she didn't just refuse to go to treatment, she did attempt. She had major struggles with follow-through. It demonstrates that she was taking steps. It's not as if she just completely abandoned the order to go to treatment to begin with.
She would go to treatment. One time she was bored, so she left. The other time is she couldn't smoke cigarettes, so she left. And the other time is she wanted to be with a boyfriend.
And our argument in terms of some of those reasons are back to the core of addiction and the difficulties with that sometimes. And those may come across as petty excuses, but ultimately when she was ready, she did go to treatment and she did complete treatment. And that was after the filing, but the filing came at a 10.5 month mark, and we believe that in that time frame there was things that were missed that could have potentially aided in her having a more successful outcome at the treatment episodes that she did attempt prior to that, and mainly that's the therapy and the contact with her children that she was advocating for throughout the course of her case, through her counsel and through her own actions when she was speaking with them and through the court, that the judge never suspended her visits except for when she was incarcerated, and yet she really never got those visits after October of 2016.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Megan Shutt, and I am the court-appointed attorney for the appellee, cross-appellant, biological father in this case, Michael Boyd. Sorry, biological father to Caden. I understand this. For clarity purposes, I was the court-appointed attorney after the appeal was filed, so I was not the trial attorney on the case. We are here today cross-appealing the order of the lower court terminating Michael Boyd's parental rights. Now, the court is well aware that the state must prove by clear and convincing evidence at least one of the statutory factors laid out in 43-2, specifically subsections 1, 2, 6, and 9. The state must prove that Michael Boyd substantially and continuously or repeatedly neglected and refused to give necessary parental care and protection to Caden. They must prove that reasonable efforts to preserve and reunify the family have been completed to correct the conditions leading to the determination of the termination of parental rights.
What evidence is there in the record that your client had any kind of relationship at all with Caden?
The record is very unclear as to how much communication, if at all, he had prior to this case filing, and then also after the fact, whether he was able to have access to him in reaching out to the department to, one, have placement. He did do that at one point in time. He did state at that time that he was not prepared for placement, but never stated in the future he wouldn't be.
Wasn't Caden about 3 when the state took custody of him?
3 or 4, I believe, yes.
Okay, right. So what evidence is there in the record that your client in his relationship with his son prior to that time?
There is no evidence on the record.
All right.
The state must also prove that Michael had subjected Caden to abandonment, and then finally whether it is in the best interest of Caden that Michael's parental rights be terminated. We would submit, based on the record before the court, or the lack thereof, as you can tell, that the state has failed to prove all of the above by clear and convincing evidence. Instead, the facts show that, unfortunately for Michael and his son, Caden, who he was not custodial parent of at the beginning of this case, or throughout this case, that this case really did fall through the cracks for him. I believe that Appley laid out many of the facts in this case, and we don't argue a lot of those.
Did you say the case fell through the cracks for him, for your client?
For him, yes.
And
by that I mean the state or the department failed to exert reasonable efforts in order to reunify him with his son.
Wasn't your client in and out of jail?
He was, Your Honor.
Wasn't he committing crime after crime after crime for the critical year here?
He was for about a month, and then I believe another time in November he did. He struggled, and that's very clear. He struggled from substance abuse issues that I believe led to a lot of the criminal acts in this case.
And this was all after the proceedings had commenced, is that right?
Some of which were. He was incarcerated at the beginning of this case, I believe.
That was in, I think it commenced in March, and then there weren't there 3 different criminal activities in May, and
yes,
then another
and then
one March. In November?
That's correct, yes.
So this is all after the proceedings got started?
That is correct, yes. We would argue that there are a lot of inconsistencies, but a lot of facts that are missing in this case. The record is very unclear as to, while Michael was not incarcerated, while he was out, how much effort the department made in contacting him. They did say they tried to phone him, and he did not answer, or they left voicemails, and he did not respond to those. I know Sarah Dunham, I believe a therapist that worked with Caden in this case, she said that his phone was disconnected, and so she didn't have updated contact information, and she never made efforts to reach out to find updated contact information for him.
Did he make efforts to communicate with her?
Not with this woman, and I don't know if he knew she was trying to get a hold of him in the first place, but with the other case managers on the case, both Heather Sissel and Ms. Lemke, he did reach out to them via letter, and Ms. Lemke actually testified to not knowing if she actually responded in the letter. And the letter that he had written to her was, "Don't give up on me." And this was while he was incarcerated. He had sent this. She knew where he was. He was in Lancaster County Jail. And she stated, "Don't give up on me. You know, I don't want to lose my son," basically. And she doesn't even know if she responded to that letter. Yet she complained because she could not get a hold of him on the phone while he was incarcerated. But he was trying to reach out, and she can't even tell if she responded or not. And that was during the critical time in this case as well. I believe while he was incarcerated, that gives you a chance to work with them, whether that is let them take part in, a drug and alcohol evaluation, or they have random drug testing, things like that. While he's incarcerated, you know where he's at, and he can partake in these things, and he's stating that he wants to.
Is there any evidence that he had actually started into any of the programs with the Department of Corrections?
There is evidence that, and there is no evidence that Ms. Lemke did testify that she did not set up any type of drug or alcohol evaluation. That was.
No, I'm saying within the Department of Corrections, did he present evidence that we had taken steps within their system to get himself engaged in their drug treatment program?
No, Your Honor, there was testimony that he did have, he did take some sort of substance abuse evaluation while incarcerated, but that was never provided to the department.
Did he present evidence that he was at least on their waiting list?
No, Judge.
It appears, if I'm reading the record correctly, he had been sentenced to consecutive terms of 180 days, 180 days, 182 days, 6 months, and 18 months. So when was he going to become a parent to this child?
He is set for release in October 2018.
But at the time this record was made, they didn't know that, did they?
The record is unclear as to whether they knew that or not. With that, we would argue, again, that these reasonable efforts weren't put forward to him. He requested placement, and they reached out to him about, I'm sorry, they ordered him to complete the substance abuse evaluation, yet nothing was ever actually set up. Again, this testimony shows that they never put any efforts towards setting up a substance abuse evaluation. There's no evidence showing that they set up anything with any facilities or anything, as well as he was ordered to complete drug testing utilizing a call-in line. Now, again, the record is clear that he was incarcerated for much of this case, and he was ordered to utilize this call-in line for drug testing that was completely impossible for him to do. So they were asking him to complete some unreasonable tasks in order to get placement of Caden in order to show that he is trying to become a good parent and trying to make efforts towards becoming a parent to Caden.
What's the best evidence in the record that Michael showed an interest in Caden? What's the best evidence?
I believe his frequent contacts, again, letters that he sent. And
letters that he sent to whom?
To both Ms. Lemke. He did send one in July of 2016, and then also he corresponded with Ms. Sissel. I believe the evidence shows that it was after the January 2017, I apologize, that he sent four or five letters, and she responded. It's unclear as to what those letters stated, and the record is unclear as to what the letters back to him stated as well.
There's no evidence that he sent any cards, gifts, or letters to Caden.
Correct.
Since the initiation of the matter?
That is correct, Judge.
No financial support?
No, but he was also not ordered to provide any financial support to Caden during that time. And again, he was incarcerated for much of this case. The thing that we would argue much of this is there was a big communication barrier, and what I'm not understanding about the record is if Michael is trying to reach out via letter, why the department is not trying to correspond with him that way, and then arguing on the flip side that they cannot get a hold of him via phone call. It's unclear as to whether they needed to try to contact his attorney at all for updated contact information, again, try to contact his family for updated contact information, anything like that. I think you need to be able to exert those reasonable efforts at least to get a hold of Michael. He wasn't the record's not very clear as to whether he had a lot of active role with Caden prior to this case, but he was trying to reach out to them, and they failed him. They focused many of their efforts on Mom, which they needed to as well. But we believe that Michael really did fall through the cracks in this way, and the purpose of the juvenile court is to reunify the family, and it appears as if.
Is this reunification in this instance? You said there's no evidence he even had a relationship.
Again, it's unclear
right?
as to whether he did or not, and I'm not sure about that exactly.
It's also not to leave the children hanging in abeyance for indefinite periods of time.
And I don't believe it's indefinite when I guess the record is not clear as to when he's going to be out. But I believe he wants that effort, or he wants to put forth that effort in order to show that he can parent this child. And he does have the constitutional right to do that.
There's been cases, and even in the short time that I've been on this court, where we've held where incarcerated parents have taken, they come in with evidence of all the classes they took at the Department of Corrections and what they've done outside if they've since been released, but then they are facing a termination.
Right.
And they put on evidence of their communication with the children. So that seems to be lacking. Where do we hang our hat on that as to what he has done, other than sending a letter to the department that says, I want a relationship with my child?
Right. Other than the
what
fact
do we have?
That I know that he did, or the testimony was that he completed some sort of drug and alcohol evaluation the department never received from him. They never requested it from him. They never contacted him to see if or contacted any of the places where he did get it done. They didn't reach out to anybody to try to obtain those records. So I know
his attorney didn't put on that evidence either of all the things that he may or may not have done while incarcerated. Is that correct?
Correct, Judge. Yes, correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My name is Tara Parkhart, and I represent the state of Nebraska in this matter. I would like to address appellant's argument first. This is a case of poor progress, which eventually led to no progress. Appellant focuses on reasonable efforts and those not being made by the department, but we need to focus on all the efforts that were made by the department and not taken advantage of by appellant.
How do you respond to her argument that the state was quick to pull the trigger here?
Well, while it is common to wait for the statutory ground of 15 out of 22 most recent months before a motion to terminate parental rights is filed, the lack of progress, the complete lack of progress almost, I believe warranted a filing of a motion to terminate parental rights, as it didn't appear that there was going to be reunification anytime soon, and it was uncertain whether or not appellant would ever reach that point. And as the court indicated previously, children should not languish in the foster care system to await uncertain parental maturity. There was no indication that that was going to occur. While appellant did finish short-term residential treatment, it was after the filing of the motion for termination of parental rights. But then again, she could have ran with that and showed progress, but didn't when she didn't attend her scheduled appointment for intensive outpatient therapy with Lutheran Family Services. And she did have two negative drug tests, but then stopped drug testing. So essentially at the time of trial, we're maybe only a little over a year in with the children out of home, but she's shown no progress and is no longer complying with a single service. There are other orders that appellant was ordered to cooperate with. One was a neuropsychological evaluation. You have to, or the record indicates that someone needs 30 days of sobriety before they can participate in one of those. The only two times that appellant had 30 days of sobriety was when she was in jail. She got out and immediately relapsed, and when she completed short-term residential treatment, did test negative twice, but then discontinued drug testing, at which point the department is no longer able to determine if appellant is maintaining sobriety, and appellant's history has actually indicated throughout the case that she is unable to maintain any sort of sobriety. As far as things the department could have done, I feel that they did basically everything that they could in this case, given her so many attempts at treatment, always had drug testing set up, and were meeting with her regularly, team meetings were held.
Could we jump to Michael a little bit here before we run out of time? There's, you know, the argument's been made that the state could have done more to assist Michael in light of the circumstances that he was incarcerated.
I will reference him as Michael since there's a couple appellees. It is true that he did commit a crime which he was incarcerated for prior to the cicadan being removed, but he was out in the community throughout periods of the time that Caden was in an out-of-home placement. Those are opportunities where he could have drug tested, where he could have showed interest in Caden, where he could have asked for visits. He did ask for visits one time. Ms. Limke gave him her contact information. She is a caseworker with the department. Said that she would check with Better Living for their availability for visitation and that he needed to follow up with her to set that specifically up. He never followed up with her and never requested visitation again. As far as Michael being able to participate in services while incarcerated, I'd first like to focus on it was his own actions engaging in criminal activity that took him out of the community and placed him in jail and then in the end in prison. Now, while there are services that parents can participate in while in the Department of Corrections custody, that is outside of the department's ability to set up programs specifically through prisons. It's Michael's decision whether or not he wanted to participate in those. And if he had, then he could have presented evidence at trial that he had participated in those. But there's no evidence on the record that he participated in any sort of programs. The only evidence was that he may have completed a substance abuse evaluation, but that was never provided to the department. As far as interest in his son, the only communication he had with the department was a few letters indicating he didn't want his rights terminated, he was sorry. I believe two before the motion to terminate parental rights was filed. Never was it a letter directed at Caden. Never was there a letter saying, how is my son doing? No gifts, cards, anything like that for Caden. And as the record does have a lack of information as to what his relationship was like with Caden prior to the removal, but that's exactly it, is that there's no indication that he did have a relationship. And even if he did, he certainly did not during the entirety of this case. He did have opportunities to parent and did not. He had not, when this case came to trial, he had not seen Caden since the removal, which was on March 4th, 2016. Trial was on May 25th, 2017. As far as...
Do you know roughly how much time he actually wasn't incarcerated then, say in 2016 when he was arrested for a number of different things? But in 2016, how much time was he not?
After Caden was removed, I'm not positive, but I know he was incarcerated three different times in 2016. And then when he was incarcerated in December of 2016, after that is when he was sentenced and went to the Department of Corrections.
But so there were some pockets of time in 2016 is what I think you're saying, that he could have taken some action.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he committed all of these crimes at once and then went into prison. jail. He would commit a crime, go to jail, get out, commit another crime, so it was continuously engaging in ongoing criminal activity, not just one incident. And as I stated before, each time he was out in the community, he had the caseworker's information. Ms. Lemke gave him her information at the disposition hearing, and she had testified it never changed, and he had a way to contact her, as did he with Ms. Cecil. She, I believe, mailed him her contact information, which never changed once he was either in jail still or maybe even in prison at that time. He obviously had a way to contact them in that he sent letters to the department, but yet never reached out while he was out in the community. The one time he did, aside from asking for visits, the one time he did file a motion for placement of Caden, then failed to appear at that hearing, and did state later that he was not in a position to take placement of Caden. If there are no further questions, I would submit it.
All right, thank you very much.
Yes, and Your Honor, I would respectfully request that this court affirm the separate juvenile court's orders terminating appellant's parental rights to Alexis and Caden and Michael's parental rights as to Caden.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Is there any rebuttal time? None. All right. Thank you very much. The matter is submitted.